Fasten your seatbelts, comrades, or you better be holding on to something heavy, like a Russian kettlebell, because if you are not willing to be part of the solution, we are going to blow your ass out the back door. This is Ron Jones and Kevin Rail, the Lean Berets, and we are Avengers of Health. Hold the donuts! You're listening to the Lean Berets radio show at theleanberets.com. Hello everyone, this is Ron Jones. I'm here in the Hollywood Hills with John Spezzano, Pacific Coast Martial Arts, and we're Avengers of Health. We're going to throw down, talk about self-defense today and creating a little public awareness. So again, this is Ron Jones and LeanBerets.com. What's an avenger? One who avenges or vindicates a grave insult. What's the insult? People violating our sense of safety today. We're going to talk a lot about that. Our credo, a guiding philosophy, a set of fundamental beliefs. What do we believe in? Speaking up and taking some action. So comes to throwing down, we're not afraid to do that, and that's why John is here with me today. So welcome, John.
Thanks, Ron. Thank you very much.
Good to be here. And yeah. I started the radio show off with some training with John out on the patio there, perfecting some hard style.
Did a lot of work out there.
Yes, and apparently I have a lot more work to do.
Don't we all?
I've been recalibrated once again by the Russian kettlebell. It's a very humbling experience because just when you think you actually know something, you run into someone like John or Dr. Chen, and you realize that you're just getting started.
Otherwise, you get bored, right?
Yeah. You would not think that a simple tool like a cannonball with a handle would be that intellectually stimulating in so many ways.
But as Doc likes to remind me, which I said so many years ago, it's just weights.
But we had a good time. I'm getting ready for the RKC, which is a Russian kettlebell challenge certification, and John is an RKC instructor as well as a martial arts expert. So I met John through Kettlebells Los Angeles, a group Dr. Mark Chen started in Santa Monica. And the first time I went down and threw down with these guys were at the beach, and they've since moved in a little bit to a park.
That's right. You were at the beach that first time, yeah.
Yeah. My wife Candace was out from Atlanta.
Right.
And it was a small group then, and now it can be up to, 30-plus people.
Yeah, which is pretty good for a Sunday at 7 a.m.
It is. You know, people at work, they're like, Sunday at 7 a.m.? You know, I thought of that for about 2 minutes, and I realized what Dr. Chen was attempting to do and has done a very good job of. You weed out the bullshit when you ask people to show up at 7 a.m. on Sunday.
Exactly.
Because there isn't anyone in that crowd that isn't pretty serious
that doesn't want to be there, yeah.
Yeah. The people that don't want to work, they won't be there at 7 a.m.
Yeah, and they won't be there a second time.
Yeah. But you couldn't meet a greater group of people, I think, I know definitely KBLA has changed my life in a real positive way, and I've been able to take some of my clients and people down there, and they've had a great experience. It just continues to get better. And one of the nice things is meeting people like John, who has so much to offer. In my profession, I'm a corporate wellness coach, and I offer a lot of different things to my clients. And one of the things that I became concerned about over a year ago, just watching the economy develop and the increasing violence in the world and the country and crime rates go up, for the most part, in most of the major cities, was trying to get someone that could do some type of self-defense training. And I literally worked on this for about 2 years before John and I were able to do this. And it's really hard to find someone that is able to simplify a very complex system, or I guess many systems. I'm learning more about martial arts all the time, hanging out with KBLA, but a lot of people like John use multiple systems now. So to be able to take all that, blend into a four-hour workshop, come into a corporate environment, teach 30 to 50 people how to defend themselves in the moment of truth without hurting anyone is an art and a science and probably a lot more other things I don't even know how to explain. But just to let you all know, I mean, it was a great experience, and we had about 35 people in there, and my knuckles took about 5 weeks to heal.
It's a good wake-up call for everybody
to
see that.
Yeah, and John's response was enjoy the pain,
yes.
So I'm getting very good at accepting that phrase now.
Not just giving it, right?
Yeah. But I got nothing but positive feedback from everyone that participated. And we had a good time with it. But it is a serious situation. I want John to talk to us a little bit about, you know, what he does and why he thinks that's important. Because this guy goes all over the world. Pacific Coast Martial Arts, martialarts.com. So would you give us a little background, John?
Let's see. Well, I started martial arts when I was pretty young, probably about 12 or 13. And I was a small kid, kind of need to learn how to fight. It was mainly my brother I was fighting with, but but it helped to get the upper hand.
Like my brother.
My brother's my first knockout. but been doing martial arts my whole life. Mm-hmm. Started with Japanese systems, moved on to some variety of softer systems, and eventually moved to Los Angeles and started really learning martial arts once I joined the Inosano Academy, and that's my instructor, Dan Inosano, who was probably the best-known martial artist in the world.
Oh, yeah.
If you train martial arts and you don't know who Dan Inosano is, something's wrong.
His name is highly respected.
Yeah. He was, you know, for those who don't know, he was Bruce Lee's main guy in the 60s and early 70s before he passed away. He pretty much carried the torch for Bruce Lee's methodology and cross-training methods. And so he takes those cross-training methods, and that's what I really fell in love with, because no single art has the answer to every combat question. You know, you just look at the UFC, for example. You have,
right.
Early on, it was Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I mean, if you knew how to throw an armbar or a choke, the strikers couldn't seem to defend it. Mm-hmm. And then over time, the people started to be able to defend it. And now you get these days where people can defend the takedown, and then they score a lot of knockouts. So it's really not the art, it's the person doing it. But mm-hmm. in addition to that, it behooves you to learn a variety of arts. Because if you learn a variety of arts, then you're comfortable in striking, be it kicking or punching or elbowing or kneeing or whatever it happens to be. And you're comfortable on the ground, whether it's on your back or on top of somebody, because those are two very different positions. Mm-hmm. It helps you when you're dealing with weaponry, whether they're edge or impact weapons, mm-hmm. because it's a completely different world where striking can be completely nullified by a basic grappler. A very small Swiss Army knife can get just about any grappler off you in a hurry. So it's good to know a variety of things. And that's sort of the approach that I really loved about what Mr. Inosano does, and that's what I really enjoy about my training. In addition to learning a lot and being more well-rounded, you never get bored.
So did Bruce Lee, did he mix a lot of different systems?
He mixed a few different systems.
And I don't know a lot about MMA, but wasn't that somewhat controversial at the time?
Very controversial
and
caused
some heat for him.
Absolutely.
Within the community of martial arts?
Very controversial at the time. At the time, he did one system, and that was it, and you
right.
did it, and no questions asked.
Right.
And he asked the questions, and he raised the questions, and they needed to be raised. I mean, he was really ahead of his time. Mm-hmm. You know, Guru Dan, that's Filipino for teacher, Guru, he uses the phrase that a truth goes through three stages. At first, when it's a new concept, it's ridiculed. Mm-hmm. And the second stage is First one is ridiculed. Second one is, now I can't think of it. Can you pause?
Yeah. Well, I'll talk from it.
Okay.
The ridicule part, I know a lot about that one. So I think I must be on to something because I've taken a lot of crap over the years. But I keep forging ahead and doing my best to bring the truth, which is, you know, what the Lean Berets is all about too. One thing I just learned the last year or so, you know, getting into the world of kettlebells, hanging out with some martial arts people, is so many people do mixed systems now. I really didn't understand that until kind of getting into the scene with you guys, and you brought that into our self-defense workshop, and I thought it was really cool the way you kind of explained the different systems that we were going to use and highlighted them. And I think one of my, you know, I look back at a learning experience and I'm like, what are the big take-home points? And one of the big take-home points for me in John's self actually, it's called Defensive Essentials 101, was that there is a time to run if you can, and there's also a time to go into the fight and charge. And the proximity you are to your opponent determines which system you might be using. And I thought that meant a lot to me. Like, I always, in my mind, I was thinking, you always had to fight away from the opponent, but there are times when it's appropriate to get in close. And I guess that's a different type of fighting, you know, in terms of technique and strategy.
Yeah, it's impossible to sort of codify what to do when at any specific moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the course is designed to really simplify some of the more common types of attacks, how to deal with them with gross motor skills, because gross motor skills are the type of skills that you can rely on when adrenaline is pumping drastically through your system, which it does when you
right.
encounter some kind of personal attack like that, personal physical attack. And so the course is really designed to sort of draw on a few different defensive concepts in terms of how to protect yourself mm-hmm. well with very simple movements, and how to neutralize an attack with relatively simple movements, the main ingredient being ferocity on your part and not
right.
taking no for an answer. You can't do it half-assed.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's, you know, if you look at kettlebells, you don't just sort of leisurely move a kettlebell around. You snap it with everything you've got.
You hit the right hips.
Yeah, you hit your hip for all they're worth. And it's the same thing. It's the same thing with fighting. And when you just make that decision that there's no choice, there's no way out. It's now or never. Then when you do it, and you go hard.
Yeah, you did a great job of that in the workshop, making that point with some humor too. But really letting us know, like, when it's time to go hard, you have to go hard.
You have to.
I mean, the being Mr. Nice Guy is over.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, you tried talking.
Yeah.
Talking didn't work.
And for people that don't know the world of kettlebells or martial arts, some of the nicest people I've met come from martial arts and kettlebell training. John's a really nice guy. I wouldn't want to cross a dude. But
you never will.
Yeah. But there's a time when you can't be nice and you have to go in hard. And I was relating this story to John before we started the show this afternoon. By the way, beautiful afternoon in Southern California, literally up in the Hollywood Hills here with John and his dogs and his wife Suzanne, and a stone's throw away from Hollywood Bowl. Beautiful day.
Good day, far enough that it's nice.
Yeah. Yeah, we're off the Sunset Strip,
yeah.
So there aren't too many crazy people running around.
Yeah.
But an incident that happened in my life in Atlanta last year, it was New Year's Day 2008, and there was a young woman named Meredith Emerson hiking, and Meredith was a beautiful young woman, educated at University of Georgia. She was out hiking on New Year's Day alone with her dog Ella, and
in the middle of the day, right?
Yeah, it was a late morning, I believe, and crisp, cool, but no weather obstructions in terms of vision or anything like that. You know, when you think of New Year's Day, you think of starting again and taking a fresh start and trying to rebirth, rejuvenate. Hope, I think, is a thing that people have on New Year's Day. And by the way, her middle name was Hope, Meredith Hope Emerson. And a bad guy was on the trail that day, and he had a dog with him, and she was a dedicated dog person. And I believe he used the dog as a way to diffuse her
caution.
Yeah, that's a good way to describe it. And she also had a martial arts background and some quality training, but she let her guard down and he got behind her somehow and hit her with some kind of club or pipe, knocked her out. Anyway, to make a long story short, he had her in the back of his van for a couple of days, torturing her, and used her charge card and, you know, dinged her bank account, and finally decapitated her and left her for dead on the trail in a shallow grave. It was one of the definitive moments in my life that forever changed me. I never met Meredith, but I felt so violated and so offended by someone that could do something like that on a hiking trail in the Appalachian Trail area. It was Blood Mountain. And by the way, my wife had hiked on that trail alone. We had the twins up there in backpacks hiking. It's just a beautiful area. And hiking is very dear to me. I think it's a very wonderful eco-therapy. And it really pissed me off. And what happened is I ended up getting involved with my wife, Candace, and some people in Georgia and creating a memorial hike shortly thereafter to create awareness. And as the universe would have it, sometimes after a tragedy, people enact a sort of empowerment with that. And an organization was formed called Right to Hike, Georgia. And let me borrow this a second. I've got the flyer off the website here. It's Right to Hike, Inc., as in incorporated, .com. And it's a nonprofit organization dedicated to raising hiking awareness and promoting physical fitness and also kindness to animals in the honor of Meredith Emerson. It put me in the right mindset to be more open to looking for people like John Spezzano to help me get this message out about self-defense with my corporate clients. And now through the Lean Berets, hopefully through people just listening anywhere in the country and beyond. And one of the things I want to talk about with John, and he's got a few stories too, is I think people just, I don't know if they don't care, they don't think it will happen to them. Maybe it's just education, they're just not aware and they need to hear something like this where we're talking today about it. But I, as a hiker and a trail runner, I see people all the time, especially young women, running alone with an iPhone or, you know, iPod on, and they're totally oblivious to anything going on around them. It could be a mountain bike coming down the trail 30 miles an hour. It could be a mountain lion here in Southern California, which, by the way, I ran onto a mountain lion a couple years ago in Southern California running alone, and you realize quickly you're at the bottom of the food chain on that one. You know, so if they're there, you definitely want some kind of warning. But, you know, the other week I was down with Delaine Ross at her kettlebell gym with my wife and twins, and we were driving by one of the homeless centers. And, you know, a lot of people are out of work now and suffering, and they're not drug addicts, and so I'm not knocking them. But there are some interesting people in that area of Atlanta walking around that are pretty spaced out on some kind of substance. And here comes a young woman running with her iPhone in her ears, and it was, you know, dark, and it was a nice evening, so she didn't have a whole lot of clothing on, and it's like, man, I just thought of Meredith and the things that I've learned from you. So can you comment on that and try to wake people up a little bit? You've seen, you know, a lot about violence and fighting, so.
I've seen that so many times where people just do the stupidest things because they either are in active denial of the fact that evil exists in the world, mm-hmm. or they're just obtuse. I'm not sure what it is,
yeah.
But like the story I was telling you before, I have some clients in a certain part of town, and when I drive home, I drive past UCLA on Sunset Boulevard, and Sunset has a running trail right there on the it's kind of a wooded running trail on the
right.
on the northern part of the campus there, and I see girls running that trail alone every time I drive that part of Sunset with their iPod in their ears. It's dusk, later than dusk.
Right.
And they're running alone. And I just don't know what goes through people's heads to think that it always is going to happen to somebody else. It's never going to happen to me. And, you know, maybe they're right. Maybe it won't happen to them. But to put yourself in that position where you put yourself at risk with a criminal who might be a criminal of opportunity of some kind, where he just happens to be driving by and he sees you and goes for it. I mean, it's just a risk I don't know why people take. Just run together.
Right.
Run with a friend. You know, be with somebody. Do it during the day.
Take the damn phone out of your...
Take the iPod off, yeah.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting is the more I thought about what happened to Meredith and I started thinking about the criminal mind, and I started trying to think like a criminal just so I could figure them out. And so, you know, they look for people...
Easy targets, soft targets.
If you've got your ears covered up and you have no clue that someone's coming up behind you, that's great for them,
mm-hmm.
because you know they can take out a lot easier than someone that hears a footstep behind them and turns around and has some time to react.
Mm-hmm.
So I think one point I want to make is, man, whether you're on a trail or you know jogging or even crossing the street, I used to do a lot of pedestrian bicycle safety stuff too in the education system, and you know you're people are so disconnected when they're talking on the phone and they're trying to cross the street and they're not paying attention. And a lot of people get killed in crosswalks every year, legally crossing the street. Doesn't matter. They're dead.
Because they're not looking.
Yeah. You know, they think they have the right of way. The lions.
Sure, you got the right of way.
Yeah.
Until a car hits you.
It's just like, yeah, the law is going to protect me. I'm hiking on this trail. And,
yeah.
And you know, but, you know, one thing I think I've learned a lot from John is in the moment of truth, there ain't nobody else but you, man. Yeah. I mean, pretty much you're on your own, and you got to at least train that way, and hopefully in a best case scenario, someone's there to help you and cover your backside. But
you're the only person who really cares about your welfare.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And who's with you 100% of the time.
Yeah.
Cop, there's enough cops out there just to do the paperwork.
Yeah.
You can't depend on police to defend you. They're not there. Not their job.
What, like most fights end in 30 seconds, so, or attacks, I mean, you know, they're not going to be there in 30 seconds. I mean, yeah. You got 30 seconds to 2 minutes or whatever it is to throw down, and you better get it on.
You better get it on and do it as mean as you possibly can muster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, again, this is John Spisano with Pacific Coast Martial Arts. His website is pacificcoastmartialarts.com. If you came in late or didn't catch that at the beginning of the show. And John, you go all over the world, eh? It's impressive looking at your travel schedule. You and Dr. Chen, man, are burning up the highway. And
it's a good problem.
Yeah, it is. It is, because you guys both do good work. And most of your work is with law enforcement, military, martial arts academies. But you've expanded this year into a corporate environment for the public, which I really appreciate that. I think there's a big need for that.
I think your belief that self-defense and personal protection is the next logical step after physical fitness is really right on the money.
Yeah.
I think everyone at the workshop in January saw that fitness is a complete necessity.
Yeah.
When it comes to fighting.
Yeah.
And anybody who's competed knows.
It's survival of the fittest.
It's absolutely.
I've been saying that for years, but yeah. You know, the times we're entering, or I say entering, hell, we're there now. You better be ready. This is not a time for weakness, it's a time for strength. And I'm not talking just about physical, I mean mental, spiritual strength as well. And at least in America, if not globally, we're heading for some difficult, trying times. I think the people that get through that will be better people because of it. But my belief, and just based on what I've read and seen, I think the next 5 years is going to be challenging. And my job in corporate wellness is to get people prepared the best that I can. And that, you know, that could be hiking, it could be Russian kettlebells. The thing I like about the kettlebells is it just doesn't give you fitness, it gives you combative levels of fitness. And with John coming in with the kettlebell training that I've done with my corporate clients, we were able to technique-wise channel our fitness into the right position for attack or defense.
Well, that's the nice thing about kettlebells and how they relate to martial arts or fighting or whatever you want to say, tactical work for military and law enforcement. The movements are functional movements. I mean, yes, there has to be some adapting to actual fighting, you know.
Right.
But the basics of the movements are all about full body explosion, about body durability,
right,
about how to generate force in a very limited range of motion, and how you're using your whole body to do these exercises as opposed to traditional weightlifting, which is more like bodybuilding, where you're isolating a certain muscle group in order to develop that one muscle group.
Mm-hmm.
The kettlebell is much more applicable and conducive to combat training because you're using your whole body.
Yeah.
And I think that one of the reasons why the two things go well together.
It was great watching my people in the workshop with you. Most of them had been doing the kettlebells. And so it really was obvious to all of us that made a big difference when it came time to defend ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and we were just doing it with bags and, you know, partners that we liked. But
yeah.
You know, I think in the moment of truth, when the shit really comes down, you know, having that kind of background, and not just physical, but it gives you a different sense of confidence, I think.
Yeah.
Many people mention that. It's like, wow, I felt the kettlebell training coming out in my strike, in my packing my shoulder and delivering the force in the right sequence.
Mm-hmm.
Because as you know, John, the sequencing of the kettlebell is really important. It's one thing I've learned a lot.
Mm-hmm.
From you and Dr. Chen and the other people that I've worked with in RKC. It's all good. Hopefully we don't have to use any of that, but...
Yeah, well, you know...
You never know. I like to over-prepare.
Absolutely. You know, the Marines say, hope for the best, prepare for the worst.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, I think that's the way you got to go through life. I think... I told you about that guy, Dave Grossman, who
right.
wrote the book that I gave to... Mm-hmm. I forget the guy's name at the course. Dave Grossman's a very knowledgeable guy on combative psychology, and he tells the story of the sheepdog and the sheepdog and the sheep. Did I tell you the story?
Yeah, but tell it again because I love the story.
It's a good story. he relates the story of the sheepdog and how the sheep relate to the sheepdog in sort of an annoying fashion. He's always kind of there in the way, just kind of a nuisance. Until the wolf's at the door.
Yeah.
And as soon as the wolf's at the door...
Where's the damn sheepdog?
Everybody is hiding behind that sheepdog.
Yeah.
And the sheepdog is Dave's analogy for law enforcement personnel.
Yeah.
And how a lot of people view law enforcement personnel as that sort of annoying sheepdog. But when the bad guys are there, you're always looking for the sheepdog. Well, the truth of the matter is, you got to be your own sheepdog.
Yeah.
You can't...
Well,
you,
especially now, they're laying law enforcement people off.
I wouldn't doubt it, especially in California where we have such a budget crisis.
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, the truth of the matter is you have to be your own sheepdog.
Right.
Because you can't sit around waiting for the cops to show up because they're going to come and do the paperwork after it's all over.
Which is a good philosophy to have. I mean, just in general, I think you're the best person to take care of yourself. I tell people that about health and fitness all the time. In fact,
absolutely true with combat, too.
Just the other day in the major media, they had a Fox News aired a story about how we're paying too much for health care in this country and we're not getting enough in return. It's like, hello, I've been saying that for years. But but now it's a big news story, and they're looking at this with Obama's rolling out the new health care initiatives and things like that. The doctor presenting the story to Fox News was emphasizing the point that, we have to put more emphasis on prevention, and that's where we'll get the more value for the money, because right now we're waiting too long, and I think with self-defense it's the same way. If you wait until someone's kicking your ass, it's too late to train.
Yeah.
You missed
your window.
Yeah, and one thing I learned from RKC and people like John is that you don't rise to the occasion, you sink to the level of your training.
It's Barrett Tillman. I wish it was my line, but it's Barrett Tillman.
Yeah, that's a great line. I use it all the time. But it's true. I had this story right before the workshop. I went for a run one night. It was in the dark.
That's funny.
Yeah, I was running down the trail, and there was a particular part of the trail that was really dark. And I had reflectors on and a white shirt and things like that. But this happened so fast, I can't even tell you. It was like, to say it happened in a second was like saying it happened in an hour. I mean, it was like a nanosecond. And before, I saw this flash in front of my face, briefly. And then next thing I knew, I had this guy around the forums, and some guy was like a ninja attack screaming in my face. I mean, it was really a wild moment, But going back to the level of your training was enacted immediately. In a nanosecond, because what I felt myself do is I had the guy's forearms, and I brought my elbows down, and I locked my lats up, which anybody that's done kettlebell training hard style knows that locking your lats up gives you shoulder stability. Dr. Chen's wife taught me to use the broken stick technique doing a pull-up, and it was kind of like that broken stick thing. I locked this guy up, and I clearly had control of him, and I had been reading John's workbook even before the workshop, so I was already cycling the learnings of Spisano, and I was thinking, I need to protect my face, get this guy out of my face, and I was starting to throw him when I realized that he was apologizing because he was another runner. We just literally ran into each other. Now, from a fitness perspective, it's funny now.
I love that story.
It scared the shit out of this guy. What was interesting, I wasn't really scared. Because I felt prepared, and I was reacting to the situation, and I felt like I had control. So, although it was kind of a nerve-wracking thing, but I didn't feel scared or like freak out afterwards. It was just kind of interesting. But I scared the hell out of that guy. But from a fitness perspective, had I not had the strength and core stability to keep this guy out of my face, and we could have broken each other's noses or foreheads. I mean, we weren't sprinting, but we were running full speed right into each other. So, number one, my strength and reaction time kept me from getting hurt just from a collision standpoint. And the other thing is just learning, a little bit of martial art technique, philosophy, whatever you want to call it, was able to get the guy away from my face because he could have been a bad guy, But anyway, you never know when that might happen, and hopefully it won't, but I tell people that it's not If the moment of truth will happen, it's just when. And that moment of truth might not be a violent attack, but it could be. You know. So now, would you like to discuss, just in brief, what your Defensive Essentials 101 does? I mean, just kind of an overview if anyone's interested in doing something like this with their group.
The course is basically designed for the working professional who has never done any type of combative training, whether it's martial arts, sports, whatever it happens to be, an actual mm-hmm. self-defense course. Mm-hmm. It's designed for somebody who's never had any training, has a decent fitness level.
Right.
Not what I would consider, you know.
Yeah. I just said, hey, you need a baseline of fitness to come in.
Yeah, a baseline fitness,
and thank God I did.
Yeah, yeah.
Because people realize, like, this defending your life is a lot of work.
It's tiring.
Like, yeah, yeah. There were people a little bit sore.
Yeah.
But so that's a good idea to come in with the base.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, I my instructor says all the time, conditioning is a technique in and of itself. Mm-hmm. You know, you might spar with some guy who's way better than you.
Yeah.
By the third or fourth round, maybe he's not that much better than you now because he's getting a little tired.
Yeah.
You know, and if you're in better shape, it can sometimes pull you through.
Right.
So so it's really important to have good fitness. Is a high degree of fitness really required for the class? No, but you should be in decent, what I would consider decent, you know, physical shape.
Yeah, and we did fine with just a moderate level of fitness.
Yeah, moderate.
We had people in there overweight and not super fit, but, you know, everyone did okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were okay.
Yeah. So anyway, the course is designed for that type of person. And what it basically does is I teach concepts to give people a sense of the importance of awareness, mm-hmm. Which I think is probably as important as anything you could possibly learn at any class. Any attack has three stages. Mm-hmm. It has before the attack happens, during the attack, and after the attack. And mm-hmm. just about every self-defense training you see focuses on the during.
Right.
Because it's too late already. The shit's hit the fan.
Yeah.
We better throw down.
Yeah.
So how do I throw down? Okay, you do this, that, and that.
Right.
But if you focus on before it happens, right. you might never need to throw down because you see it coming a mile away. You cross the street, you get in your car, whatever it happens to be.
Put the phone away.
Stop texting. Put your BlackBerry away. Whatever it happens to be, stop doing it and focus on what you're doing, which is really walking through an open area to get to your car, to your house, to your friend's house, whatever it happens to be.
Yeah.
And people tune out so much that they don't realize how much they're missing. So I think one of the key components that we teach in the course is awareness and how important awareness is. Mm-hmm. Once we get past awareness and past the pre-altercation stages, assuming something has happened and there's no choice, but now something's going to go down.
Right.
Now we deal with the physical skills of what are you going to do?
Right.
How do you punch? Mm-hmm. How do you kick? How do you knee? How do you elbow? How do you do the things that you have to do to strike? Because those are the weapons that you always have on you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. You're always going to be able to do that. You might not always have a car key in your hand to poke somebody
knife
with or something.
Gun,
whatever it happens to be, you know.
Yeah,
like you might drop it, you know. Who knows?
Well, I could have had a gun. I would have had time to use it with that guy.
Yeah, because
the guy was in my face, and I had nothing else but my grip.
You had no time to respond.
Yeah.
So we teach people how to do basic striking. We teach people how to do basic defenses off of striking attacks, mm-hmm. off of tackling attacks, off of edge weapon, and off of impact weapon attacks. And people say, well, that's a lot of material. How are you going to cover all that in 4 hours? Well, what I think is the beauty of the course is that the simplicity is in its simplicity and how every attack that we use is very much related, whether it's a punch or whether it's a strike with a impact weapon, strike with an edge weapon. So a lot of the attacks have a lot of familiarity between each other, a lot of similarity to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so our defenses then can be pretty similar. It's just the risks are greater as you go from empty hand attack to impact weapon attack to edge weapon attack. So your risks are greater, and you have to understand the risks. But if you have no choice but to fight, then you should do so with a good set of tools in your hand.
Mm-hmm.
Or in your head, depending on whether you have anything in your hand or not.
Now, as a layperson coming into this with very little MA background, you know, I felt pretty good about the way that John laid this out because it's very layered. The principles he set out when we started the education, then we went into the first physical moves, built upon other moves that he layered in throughout the next couple of hours. So it, like you said at the beginning, this will, you'll see this over and over and over, and we're just going to lay one more thing on top of this. But here we're going to go back to this basic foot pattern, basic, you know, protect the skull. And it was very sequential.
Yeah.
And I thought you did a great job with that.
Thanks.
And the instructors were right on the money with building on those basic blocks.
Mm-hmm. And I think another key component to this, and this is something that I do with Operational Skills Group when we teach law enforcement, mm-hmm. is we keep the movements to be gross motor skills.
And that's like that's a major concept.
That's a really major concept.
That a little bit.
Yeah. It's simple, but it's really, really, really important. When your body starts producing adrenaline under high stress, you lose the ability. Everybody's gotten close to a car accident or something, and they pull over and they look, and their hands are shaking,
right?
Or they're sweating, or they're breathing pretty rapidly, and their heart's pounding, mm-hmm. and all those physiological things happen to you. And one of the things that happens is you lose the ability to do fine motor actions, things like threading a needle, or even signing your name, or something like that becomes very difficult to do. There's a lot of martial arts systems that utilize a lot of fine motor skill, and you know it's good. It's mm-hmm. fine. It's fine for the person who trains all the time, trains a lot,
right?
Learns to depend on it. It becomes their go-to move. It becomes ingrained and it becomes their default movement. For someone who's a corporate employee,
yeah, we're just doing a workshop.
Who's going to do a workshop, and right. they're not doing a lifetime of martial arts training.
Right, right.
You need to depend on something that is
simple.
Right. And gross motor skills are a simple type of movement that you can still rely on under high adrenalized stress. Mm-hmm. And so that's what the movements are. That's what the defensive movements are designed to work under, and that's what the offensive combination striking that we use mm-hmm. in the course are designed to work on. There's nothing fancy at all. It's all very much down and dirty,
right?
And just defend and hit back hard and hit back often.
Right. Yeah. One thing we got out of the course was, you know, if you can't get gone, you better get it on. And that means do something. Because if you can't remember all the steps, just do something.
But, yeah.
You know, you only have a few seconds, right? So you better get it on.
Exactly.
If that's what you have to do.
Yeah. If you can't run, get it on and go for it with all your worth, for all your worth.
Yeah.
So that's the during part of the attack. And then after that, there's the post-altercation protocol, which I go into more in the course, but basically what to do after something happens. You know, well, should I call the cops, or should I do this, or yeah. how do I deal with that? And what if there's another person around, and what do I do? And so we deal with all those what-ifs as well.
Which was interesting. A couple weeks after we did the workshop with John in this community of California where I had him come in and perform this, there was a lady in that same community that had an 11-month-old child. Did I tell you the story?
No.
Oh, wow. True story. My mom told me, who lives in that town. She went to Target, broad daylight, was putting her child in the back seat. Guy came up behind her, wanted to carjack her car. She didn't yell. She didn't fight. She got in the car with the guy. They drove away. They drove to the bank. He got her bank card, took money out of her account, drove to a public school, raped her violently in the back of the SUV in front of her baby, and got away. Fortunately, he was arrested a couple weeks ago in Los Angeles. But I, you know, when my family told me about this, I flashed back to John, and it's like, you know, one of the things that he really drove in the workshop is this awareness factor, which we started the show with today. When you're walking into a parking lot, even though it's broad daylight, you need to be aware of what the hell is going on. If you see someone lurking about that doesn't seem to be going to any particular car,
trust your gut.
Yeah, you might want to go back in the store, or you might want to keep walking and go somewhere else, or you know. But I think what happened is, you know, from the get-go, she put herself in a bad situation, and you know, maybe the guy came out of nowhere. I don't know. But one thing I learned just recently, and maybe it was John that told me this, is a lot of people are hiding under SUVs now because they sit up so high. So, you know, many women with children have SUVs, and they go up to the car, and somebody's underneath of the car. And they open the door, and they don't see anybody around, and next thing you know, some dude jumps out from underneath the car and and you've got a problem. So you need to look around, you need to look on the other side, you need to look underneath. And it's not that we have to be paranoid, but we do need to be aware, especially in these times.
It's not paranoid. It's just awareness.
Yeah.
The problem is people, you know, people think it'll never happen to them, and hopefully it won't. You know, but what if?
I'll tell you, well, I when I was in school, my undergrad, I had a morning class, and I came home at a really weird hour, it was like 8:30. Came into the house, and the front door had been kicked in. So being a combative type of personality, I was pissed off and went into the house angry without thinking. And trying to find someone to hurt, right? Well, I found the guy. He came out of my bedroom, pulled a knife on me, and tried to stab me. The bedroom he came out of was a master bedroom where my 9mm was loaded and ready to go. My back was open to the other end of the house, which also had a doorway which could let someone else in. So I finally used my brain and thought, this guy's got a weapon, and my back is open. And it's a dark house. It was kind of overcast that day, and it was pretty dark in the house. I had problems seeing. And so I decided to use the first part of John's recommendation was get gone.
It's so, always the best thing to do if you can.
So
it
I got
is always the best thing to do.
I got gone. I went next door. I had the neighbor call the police, and I thought, you know, I didn't see a car outside. I bet the guy's on foot. And I ran around the corner. We're on a corner lot. Sure enough, he was hopping over the fence. So I stopped using my brain again and started chasing the guy. And I can run decently, so that he figured out in a hurry he wasn't going to get away from me. And then he stopped and turned around. I thought, okay, this is stupid because he might have my gun, right? So to make a long story short, he got away in the car because I didn't want to tackle him. I didn't know if he had my gun or not. He had been out of prison 3 days, and they arrested him a couple days later. And after a year and a half, we put him away on a third strike, so he got 33 years. But one of the things I learned is that when you're within, I think the law enforcement at the time told me, if you're within about a 10-foot area and a guy and a knife, that's called like a kill zone, because these guys in prison are trained to lunge and take about two or three slashes and hit major arteries and you're done. And they kind of scolded me for being that close to the guy. I didn't know. You know?
You wouldn't. There's no way you would know.
Yeah, I didn't know, man.
There's no way you would know. It's the rule now. Used to be 21 feet. I think they've increased it to 30 feet.
Okay.
And people think 30 feet. How's somebody going to possibly cover 30 feet before you put two bullets between his eyes?
Yeah.
You ever seen how most cops shoot? Right?
Yeah.
Training is not qualifying.
Yeah.
Most cops go to the range once a year to qualify.
Right?
That's not training.
Yeah.
You think you're going to put two bullets on the cross, on the X when your life depends on it and your hands are shaking and the dude's running at you? So the reason it's that big is because people miss.
Yeah.
And it gives you more time. Remember we said in the course, distance is your friend.
Yeah.
You know, more time to respond.
And I had basically no time to respond. This guy had practiced those moves in prison. He had been a lifer in prison anyway, pretty much in prison since he was a young teenager. But the point I think here is that you never know when the moment of truth is going to arrive. You need to be aware and you need to have some kind of training to prepare. And number one, you need to get your ass in shape. I mean, 80%
number
of the people, 80% of the people in this country are overweight or out of shape or both. And that's
unacceptable.
I'm telling you, it's not acceptable. It's pathetic. And Lean Berets are here to get the word out and create that awareness. Get your ass in shape and then get some self-defense training with Pacific Coast Martial Arts and John Spizzano, or find a kettlebell instructor somewhere. Do something. It's just like fighting. You know, just do something, okay?
Yeah.
Just move. But if you want to contact John, we're going to wrap the show. It's John Pisano, PacificCoastMartialArts.com. I'll have those links in the Lean Berets.
Ron, it's Spizzano.
Spizzano. I'm sorry. I don't want to piss off an Italian man that knows martial arts. He's also the owner of HollywoodKettlebells.com. So when we joke around about kettlebells going Hollywood, we never talk about John.
Because it's too late. We've already gone Hollywood.
That's not what I mean, because there's one guy in Hollywood that knows what the hell's going on with kettlebells, and he is the real deal. So you can find him at HollywoodKettlebells.com as well. But if you have an organization or a group or a business as a corporate well coach, in America, I'm going to tell you, it's a very good investment to protect your employees with some defensive essentials 101 by John and his group at PacificCoastMartialArts.com. You can contact them there, and again, we'll have those links up. So until next time, this is Ron Jones speaking on behalf of Kevin Rail and the other Lean Berets, Avengers of Health around America. We hope you get fit and be strong and kick some serious ass in 2009, because this is a time for strength, comrades, not a time for weakness. Until next time, stay fit.
Thanks, Ron.
Thank you, man. From Hollywood, live, you've been listening to Lean Berets, Avengers of Health. Music provided by Calcaneus. You can check them out at calcaneus.com.